Welcome to the Creative Life Story Work podcast, where we explore how to make life story work better for all care experienced children and young people. Creative life story work is a new approach which can improve children and young people's lives and their relationships with others at home and at school. It's based on the Rose model of therapeutic life story work. Each month, we'll explore a different aspect of creative life story work and we'll give insights into how you can use this approach to help care experienced children and young people make sense of their past and build a brighter future. My name is Dawn Williams and I am an associate at Blue Cabin, one of the partners on this exciting work in the region. In today's podcast, we will explore the impact of grief and loss on children and young people and their relationships with themselves and others. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome into the studio Kira McClelland. Kira has over 12 years practice experience, specialises in working with children, young people, parents, families and caregivers impacted by adverse childhood experiences. In addition, Kira works on relationship repair within traumatised systems, organisations and communities. Her approach is innovative, creative, therapeutic and trauma-informed, combining psychodynamic, dyadic and somatic therapies. A very warm welcome into the studio today, Kira, to you.
Oh, thank you, Dawn. Thank you so much. It is lovely to be here.
What would you say the importance is of telling your story?
I guess the best way to start answering that really is I've personally found power and healing power in sharing my own story. So I personally grew up in a family where we always told stories. So an Irish family where basically everyone had a story to tell. And whether it was true or not, everyone kind of listened. I've personally found, you know, growing up in a way to process my own kind of life experience and my own traumas, I studied and trained in theatre and performance. And then I studied and trained in drama therapy. And I'm now a drama therapist, about 12 years a drama therapist. So for me personally, and I actually grew up on the stage. So I would have, since I was young, I would always kind of be acting or performing. And so I always find some sort of, I suppose some healing in drama and in storytelling and a way of kind of escapism. So, yeah, and actually when I was training in drama therapy, I put on like an autobiographical performance that kind of supported me to share my story of growing up in Northern Ireland and the Troubles, and how I was directly impacted by the Troubles and all of that. So for me, story actually and theatre and drama was a great way of being able to express myself and my story, but at a distance, like through different characters and that kind of thing. So for me, I've found, yeah, great power in sharing my story and owning my story and actually trying to understand it and frame it and reframe it, because, you know, my mum might have a different experience of my story. My dad might have a different experience of my brother, and the community might, you know, have an experience, or the news might tell me of my experience or my story, but actually being able to take control and actually, I suppose, explore that through story and be able to tell it is really healing. Storytelling always reminds me of that Brené Brown quote around the bravest thing we can do is own our own story. So, and I find a lot with working with care experienced children that, you know, they don't quite, similar to myself, I suppose, when I was younger, don't quite understand their story. There seems to be a lot of an enmeshment around whose story is it, where do I start, where do I end. So a lot of my kind of work with children in care and young people in care has been around supporting them to really, like, take ownership, you know, and to really explore and frame and reframe their story and tell it from their point of view.
I love that you talk about drama and growing up on the stage. And I'm thinking of some of our associate artists who are theatre makers and clown doctors. And they talk a lot about using theatre as a method of working for playing and for telling stories and for trying things out and for sharing and stuff as well. So it just resonates a lot with some of the conversations I've had with our artists. I know you're going to be doing a live classroom for us in November, and two of the phrases that you used, where I immediately thought, before I knew that you had a drama background, you used two phrases, holding space and holding in mind. And I just wondered if they have roots in the theatre, or did you mean something different by those phrases? They leapt out at me when I read them, and I wanted to dig into what you meant by them.
So, yeah, just to speak to your point about the associate artist, there is great power in theatre and you know, being able to play different parts and that kind of thing. And actually, there's a lot of evidence and research that talks to the point of it being a great vehicle to heal and transform from trauma and emotional kind of upset. And actually, I'm sure you know of Bessel van der Kolk, in his Body Keeps the Score, there's a whole chapter in theatre and the healing power of theatre. So it's a very, very interesting topic. But holding space and holding a mind, I've never actually considered if they're linked to theatre. But maybe we can explore that now.
Yes, let's do it.
Yeah. It's interesting. What I mean by holding space is probably from my therapy talk in a way. So as therapists, we're trained to hold space for people and hold people in mind. So holding space for me is something about non-judgmental listening, really listening, supporting someone to be really heard and seen and understood without giving your opinion necessarily, and creating a safe space where someone can feel free to talk about how they're feeling or explore. And I suppose holding in mind as well is for me, it's something around, for example, talking about perhaps in the therapy space might be helpful, but if a client perhaps is late or doesn't show up, then I would, make sure that I'm holding them in mind or holding space in the room. So sitting, thinking about them, maybe why they haven't showed up and maybe why they're coming in late. The holding in mind thing reminds me of, I don't know, with children, if you've ever had this, where a child might give you a stone as a way of saying, remember me. Or an object or something like that. And for me, that represents holding in mind. And I'll always give voice to that. I'll always say something like, I'll remember you. I'll keep you in mind. So I suppose from a therapeutic point of view, that's how I understand it. And in my personal life and professional relationships as well, those things, I suppose, what's the word? Move over. The stuff in the therapy room also moves over to kind of, personal professional relationships. But in terms of theatre, holding space in theatre, I suppose you could be holding the audience, right?
Yeah, I think when I read it, I thought, oh, that's what we've heard in some of our creative life story sessions about. Mm. Allowing the space for the child to tell their story, whether they're working with a theatre maker or a graphic designer, being the author, being the theatre maker, mm. being the printmaker of their stories, and being given the space, whether that's virtual or face-to-face as well. It was just one of the big themes that comes out of the conversations with the children and the adults in the room as well, about allowing that space for the story to breathe as well. So that's why that phrase leapt out.
I love that. Yeah. And that makes sense, I suppose, in the therapy space, that's part of it, isn't it? Offering that safe container where, the child or the children or young people can feel safe to really let go and, paint that blank canvas as however they want to paint it without judgment. So, yeah. Definitely
and,
links up.
And also just to take the theatre metaphor as well, I know one of the objects that get created in the creative life story sessions is the set. Just they create their own set, and it's like what goes on the stage and what's kept backstage. What will I share? Who will invite? Who will I invite to be the audience? Mm. Who will sit in the chairs? You know, going, what will be the scenery that goes in as well? It was just a great metaphor. And when I saw right. your words, I just thought, oh, that's what they're saying in there.
I love that. And I love that they have they're their own directors in a way. Absolutely. You know, their own creators. Yep. They get to put boundaries in place in terms of telling the story, because, you know, there is a risk I find with sharing stories about it being re-traumatizing and stuff, and the fact they can control what is shown and what stays behind stage and who's invited, who's allowed to hear their story. You know, yeah. not everyone deserves to hear our story. It's important around, actually, there's something about maybe audience members holding space for our sharing of our stories. You know, it's important that whoever we share them with can hold space for us, because it's a vulnerable thing to be able to share your story.
Let's go to a short break now so you can hear about Blue Cabin's Creative Life Story Work membership offer.
We want people to gain more of an understanding about what it's like to be care experienced and to have a better understanding of what it actually means.
Could Creative Life Story Work make a difference to the care experienced children and young people you work with? Maybe you're a social worker.
I think we forget at our peril that actually telling a child the story of their early life is one of the most profound uses of social work power that we could ever operate.
Perhaps you're a foster carer.
You know, when they say it's all about the child, it's not, because our experiences, it's about the carer and the child. And it just gives a new angle to our relationship, because we're learning about each other together.
A Creative Life Story Work membership will give you or your whole team access to resources, including activities you can use in direct work with children and young people, training with Life Story Work experts, and lots more.
And I think a lot of our children are looking for meaning, looking for, you know, well, why is it I feel this way when my, you know, my friends don't? Why is it I get angry internally and my friends don't? The greatest thing we see is when we are able to say to young people, this is your story, this is about who you are. And then children towards the end say, it's not my fault that these things happened, but it is something that I can do something about. And once we have that, then we know we can move forward.
Find out about our membership for individuals and for organisations on our website, creativelifestorywork.com.
Kira, marvellously for Blue Cabin, you're going to be delivering one of our live classrooms in November. And I wondered if you'd like to say a bit about what might happen in that live classroom and maybe some practical ideas that foster carers or social workers could take away with them to support their practice.
Yeah, sure. I'm looking forward to it.
So are we.
It's exciting. So it's really a live classroom to bring together professionals, whether you be a foster carer, a social worker, anyone who's working with children or young people who have experienced grief. And let's be honest, we've all experienced some sort of grief. And it's really to bring together the knowledge and expertise and experience of those professionals, really. So it's more about that than me kind of, you know, teaching live classroom into kids teaching in some way. So I see it as a workshop around bringing together different people's experiences and understanding of grief. And part of that will be supporting people to really think about how grief can affect us and how it might affect children and young people and how it might affect their relationship with themselves and the relationship with others, and to give some practical and creative ideas around, you know, holding space for young people and thinking around kind of self-care for children and young people and for themselves as professionals. And really, you know, an opportunity for people to learn with and from each other. You know, I'm excited about giving space for people to be creative on the classroom. So there'll be space to, I've asked people to bring along coloured pens and pencils and a leaf from the garden and some stones in a jar, because it'd be nice to do some creative activities. And I'll also share some well, a lot of resources and links and creative ideas as well that they, you know, can take away with them. But really it's about trying to be creative in the moment and share our experience of that as and when it happens.
How does an understanding of the impact of grief and loss help practitioners who are maybe just starting those first conversations with life story work?
There's something about really supporting people to really sit with their own stuff first in some ways. So for me, I love this quote, and I don't know who it's by, but I think it's an unknown author, but we can only really be trauma informed when we understand our own traumas. So there's something about, you know, obviously in the workshop, we won't go too deep into people's own personal grief and experiences, but there will be some time and space for people to reflect on a time where they've experienced grief. And part of that is then creating some empathy. There's huge significance for grief and loss for children or young people in care or who are care experienced. I found that a lot of my kind of direct worker experience with children and young people is there seems to be a lot of kind of, it seems the feelings seem to be quite suppressed, and it seems to be a topic that isn't always talked about so easily because it's a difficult topic to talk about. But in terms of significance, you know, the you only have to think of the initial kind of relationship between mum and child. You know, you have a baby who's in the mother's womb and is attached to the mum, and then when they're born they're dependent on the mum and the caregivers, and for a child to then lose that, there's great grief with that, you know, or to lose what they thought they might have, what they hoped for. So there's a lot of, I suppose, grief around not experiencing the relationship with their mum or their caregiver that they, you know, that they felt that they needed. Some stuff around abandonment, loss. So all of those kind of early kind of losses will definitely have an impact on someone and how they feel about themselves. So Winnicott talks about our internal working model, and usually our early years experiences, they're imprinted on how we experience ourselves in relation to ourselves and our others. So for a child or young person to lose their caregivers or their caregiver, it's very likely that they will then internalize something like, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy to be loved, I've been abandoned. You know, it's very common for children and young people to internalize that abandonment as it's their fault. And interestingly, I went to a talk to listen to Gabor Maté, who is, I'm sure people will know Gabor Maté, but he's in his 80s now, but he is a expert in trauma and addiction and child development. And he actually, at the age of one, was abandoned by his mother. And to this day, he still is triggered by that experience. And he is a well-known therapist with decades of experience and decades of healing work that he's also gone through. But he told a story, interestingly, about being triggered by not being seen and understood. So I don't know if it's helpful to give a quick story about that.
We always like a story on the podcast.
Yeah. So he unfortunately he was abandoned by his mum when he was one. He grew up in the time of, he was a Holocaust survivor. And he's written many, many books, and he's very experienced. You only have to Google him. But he, despite all his healing work, despite all his expertise, he actually was interviewing Prince Harry, and Prince Harry was talking about, you know, the importance of being seen and heard and understood, and his grief about his mum, Diana, and the fact that he didn't feel seen or understood by his father. And Gabor Maté was kind of supporting him to help him feel seen and understood and to say, it's okay, you know, it's okay to want to feel nurtured and to feel supported and that kind of thing. And actually the British, according to Gabor Maté, the British public, the Spectator, I think, wrote an article on it saying something like, oh, Gabor Maté was comparing Prince Harry to animals or something, because he told a story around, you know, even mice or rats when they're born, you know, they need affection, they need love, and that's how their brains develop, how their confidence develops, all the rest. And the Spectator, supposedly, took it, you know, it turned it around. And actually it triggered Gabor Maté, where he then felt terrible depression, low mood, anxiety. He locked himself away. His wife was saying he was very difficult to deal with at that period of time. And he was wondering what the hell had happened, what had been triggered. So he tells the story of calling his best friend, Bessel van der Kolk, who, again, is an expert in trauma. And Bessel van der Kolk was saying, well, what is it? What part of you has been triggered? What age? And he said, you know, it's the part that wasn't seen, wasn't understood. That younger part, that one-year-old that was abandoned by his mum. So he'd internalized that, you know, sense of abandonment as not being seen, not being understood, and not being held in mind. And he was, you know, he was triggered so much by the British paper's response to it that at the age of 79 or 80, that he was still triggered by that. And very quickly, he also told another story, which I think will help put context in it. He talked about being in the room with his therapist in his 70s, and he experienced himself as a one-year-old, and he experienced his therapist as his mother. And he started to get upset and cry and say to the therapist slash his mother, who he was seeing her as, that, you know, it's my fault. I'm so sorry, you know, that I was such a hard child. And actually at that age, he was still, that's how he viewed himself. So the reason I suppose I'm sharing this story is to show the sense of abandonment that a lot of children in care and care experience do experience is, unfortunately, so deep-rooted that they will be triggered and re-triggered. And I suppose the work is around holding space and allowing them to feel safe enough to express. And there's something about showing up as professionals and as foster carers and caregivers around showing up each day, you know, and showing them that you are going to be there for them, because there will always be a sense of that the next person will leave.
I had one final question, which you've kind of started to talk about, and it was really about how an understanding of the impact, which you've just described in those two stories, how an understanding of the impact of grief and loss can help practitioners who are undertaking life story work with children and young people.
Yeah, I think there's something about, you know, go easy, go slowly. You know, it takes time for someone to trust and to open up, to be able to share how they're feeling. And, you know, you're not really, in my opinion, going to get life story work done in a couple of sessions. You know, it's about building that relationship, creating a safe, trusting, secure relationship where they feel like they're genuinely able to be seen and heard and understood. And I suppose that's when you can start to support children and young people to really explore their life story, because it can be triggering. And it's around, I suppose it's around also being curious around what might be triggering, and, you know, making sure that as a practitioner that you're not doing this work on your own, that you're always checking out with a supervisor or someone else around, thinking about what might be going on as well in working with someone around their life story. Because, you know, as a practitioner, professional as well, there are going to be, you know, wounds in yourself that might be re-triggered. And it's important about really being careful, slow and gentle and loving in your approach, really.
Slow and loving in your approach. And on that lovely note, Kira, I'd like to say thank you for being here this afternoon, for sharing your stories and insights. It's been an absolute delight to speak to you.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much.
Whether you're a foster carer, someone who has experience with the care system, or you work with children and young people, we hope this episode has given you an insight into how we can make Life Story work better for young people and how you can use it in your own practice. You can find out more about Creative Life Story Work on our website, creativelifestorywork.com, and you can find us on LinkedIn and Twitter, or X as it's now called, at creativelsw. Please do get in touch with any comments or questions, as we'd love to hear from you. If your podcast app allows you to do so, please take a moment to rate or review our show. It really helps others to find the podcast. So until next month, bye for now.